Hello, and welcome to another episode of Blue Marble Podcast. I'm your host, Rev Charbert. Thanks for tuning in. Our purpose is to educate and to motivate about how to put our nature-centered spirituality into action for the planet and for each other. This time, our featured guest is Pamela Kelly McAfee, member of CSNP, that's the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast team, and past worship leader for U.S. Air Force members and their families remain an afterthought. So we're going to get into it today. Pamela, thank you so much for being here with me.
Oh, well, thank you so much for the invitation. It means a lot to me to be here and to.
We had a wonderful Green Faith Circle featuring Pamela this month as well. And if you go to www.circlesanctuary/circlegreen, you can find a recording of that. And she was giving more of a presentation. So it's great to be able to have this conversation with you as well on Blue Marble. I'm going to kick off just by asking what I ask everybody on this podcast is, how would you describe your relationship with nature, with the rest of nature? What's your relationship with the rest of nature?
We talk a lot of a little bit about. I think you and I both have a little bit of a touchback to UU, and one of the things of the seven principles of UU that resonates with me the most is that interconnectedness of all life. And I'm not a Buddhist, but I call myself Buddhish because I believe I am an animist. I believe in the souls of trees and the souls of animals. So when we're talking prior to the show, and you're saying, look, if something spiritual hits you, go ahead and go with it. And I don't like talking about this to people who are not of our spirituality, but I talk to the trees. The trees talk to me. I have a connection with them. And when I lived in, and it's not like, hey, how are you? How's the weather? It's a different wavelength. And when I was in England, my ex was military, so I moved around my entire life. And I remember driving with my friend one day, and he was like falling asleep in the car. And we're driving through one of the King's Forests in it's like a nature reserve. And we're driving through the King's Forest, and there's all these beautiful trees. And all of a sudden, I slam on the brakes, and my friend like hits the windshield. I'm like, I'm so sorry. That tree just screamed at me. And he's like, yeah, I don't know if it was you slamming on the brakes or the tree screaming at you that woke him up. But it was just basically telling me, it's saying, look, you need to save us. Yeah, you need to save us. You need to take action. You need to make sure that you're doing what you can. And I can tell, I know anyone that's connected with nature can tell the difference between the air, the birds, the when things bloom, from when we were younger to how it is now. And I feel bad. Sorry, and I have the connectedness of my dogs, but they don't listen. They're gonna start barking. But I feel bad for the kids, for the younger people today, because they don't know what we had, and this is their normal, and it's not normal. It's not normal. But that connection with nature, I think something that helps keep me grounded and helps keep me it I whenever I feel like I'm not grounded. And there's a reason it's called grounded, because it's the ground. You touch the earth, you connect with the earth.
Nice.
Whenever I don't feel grounded, I like to go out and just do that, just sit with nature. I can't really, I have mobility issues, so I'm in my wheelchair, so I can't do it like I used to. But today is a beautiful day in North Carolina. It's my kind of day where it's just crisp enough. The skies are blue with the wispy upper level cirrus clouds, and there's a nice brisk breeze. And yeah, all the plants are having sex though, so that doesn't do good for my allergies.
And I have the same sort of allergy thing too. And of course, as the globe gets warmer, There's a lot more going on with allergies. That's one of the impacts in healthcare that people are experiencing as a result of warmer weather, as a result of global warming. Yeah.
Let me plug my doctor's book again then. My doctor, I have a lot of doctors, you know, having chronic illnesses, but I have the doctor that I call my rock star doctor, and he's my allergist immunologist. His name is Dr. Frank Lichtenberger, and he wrote a book called Allergic to Life. And I know that that's part of why he got involved. Why he does what he does is he sees how we're impacting nature to the point, like you said, that allergies are more prevalent. The one of the things that he treats that I have is mast cell activation syndrome, and it's not allergies, but it's like allergies. It's part of an allergic response, and it's the guard cells. They're guardian cells in your body, and because there's abnormal, unnatural stuff out there, your body's like, oh, I gotta be careful about this. So.
Could you please repeat his name and the name of the book again for our listeners?
Allergic to Life, and it's Dr. Frank Lichtenberger. Lichtenberger.
Okay. Lichtenberger, Allergic to Life, yeah.
And it's not a very long book, but he's got a really goofy sense of humor like me, so I'm enjoying it.
Well, thanks for that reference. Now, let me ask you, how did you get involved with disability justice? I know your own journey with various barriers that you live with and work with, but disability justice is a thing in itself. So could you tell us what that is, and then how did you get involved with it?
I don't know if I'd say if I have a word for sorry, a definition for disability justice. It's just basically nothing about us without us is the motto that we have, and a lot of others, and that's that. I want to come back to others, but a lot of others use that nothing about us without us too. So disability is the largest, most intersectional other or marginalized community out there. And you know, when you talk about justice, you usually don't, justice to me is not a term that I latch onto, but agency, not necessarily power, but agency. And I talk about, when you think about disability, don't think about, well, Pam's in a wheelchair. Think about, well, Pam has barriers to, you know, these are the barriers that Pam has because of who she is, not because there's something unnatural, because disability is natural. You know, it's part of the human experience. So in my human experience, I have barriers that I need curb cuts. I need, so it basically comes from basically saying, hey, look, I need to have the same access as everybody else. One of the things that I talk about when I talk about disability stuff and voting, I do a lot of stuff with political work and access to the ballot box and making sure that laws, legislation and such I talk about the barriers, but I also talk about, you know, even though we're fighting to keep a lot of the momentum that we've done in the past 50, 60 years with the civil rights movement and women's issues, the group that got their power, their laws, their protections at the very end in the 90s was the disabled community with the ADA. And the ADA is a beautiful thing, but it's also a really hard to enforce thing, because it's like, we have this law, but then what are you going to do when somebody breaks the ADA law? One of my biggest pet peeves is when people park, if you're driving and there's the accessible parking that is also commonly known as handicap parking, but I'm trying to use terminology that's a lot more acceptable. Take it and it's accessible parking, because we're talking about barriers and not the illness or the what. So anyhow, right next to certain spots is like a hashed with diagonal lines spot. And I didn't know at one point I would park there because I saw other people parking there, but I always felt like it was wrong for me to park there. And I should have gone with my gut because you're not, it's illegal to park there. That is for people who might need to open their side van and let their, let like the, a motorized wheelchair down on a dolly or such. So that is part of the accessible parking. And so what got me into, I'm going off on these tangents to basically say what got me involved with this is once I started needing access and the barrier started getting greater, I'm not one to be a shrinking violet. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute. So
you were advocating for yourself, and then you started to see the larger issue. Yeah. Or you saw the larger issue along with, but you needed to advocate for yourself, it sounds like.
But I also had this connection. I am not one for trying to take in another culture's beliefs, but I will say that the Orisha Obatala, always when I heard the story of Obatala, and forgive me if I'm not pronouncing it the way that you would like me to, I'm doing the best I can, but he was the person who created men. He was like working with clay and making men, and he got too drunk one day and he started making people with disabilities, that were born with disabilities. And when he sobered up, he's like, oh my goodness, what did I do? I need to protect these people. This is my job. And that resonates with me. And I'm not trying to take somebody else's beliefs and make them my own. I'm just telling that story resonates with my core and has since I've been a.
Yeah. And that's a creation myth that I think I hear you describing, right? In which culture is that with?
It's in some of the African diaspora.
Oh, okay. Some of the African diaspora creation myth. All right. Oh, that's interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah. And when I think about justice, I mean, in the broad sense of the term, you know, it's a concept that individuals, all of us, are to be treated in a manner that is equitable and fair. And so when I think of justice and rights, you know, rights for particular groups, that a society that's honoring those rights is creating policy laws that treat different groups of people in a way that's equitable and fair, and that there's a way to uphold those policies with accountability or to enforce those laws. So that, I guess that's what I'm talking about with when I think of what's just.
Well, and see with, and this is happening with, and let's go back to the others. I'm going to touch back on the others thing. This happens with other sections of marginalized communities is honestly, when you're talking about disability, we just want the same, you know, equitable participation, equitable access to things. And, you know, going back to the voting, that to me is one of the most important things, especially with the work that I do and the things that I've seen. I do a lot of work with campaigns and parties and trying to get voting rights, things like that. And one of the main things that we do, we were talking before the show about how important it is to get like the youth vote out, and the youth have a lot of passion. There is a lot of people in our country, not just the youth, who feel disenfranchised, like, what, my vote doesn't count, my vote doesn't matter. So trying to get those people to understand, yes, indeed, your vote matters. In my state of North Carolina in 2020, we had the first female Black Supreme Court, had Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of North Carolina. She was elected prior to 2020, but she was up for re-election in 2020. She lost the statewide race by 401 votes.
Your vote matters.
401 votes. So yeah. 100 counties in North Carolina That means, I'm sorry about my dog starting to bark now. That means with 100 counties in North Carolina, you're talking about 4 votes per county and then one. And we could have that seat. So with people don't realize how close the margins are these days, your votes do matter. There was an election not too long ago. I think it might have been in 2016, could have been 2018, in Virginia, that it came down to a tie. They counted and recounted and recounted, and it came down to a tie, and they settled it with a coin toss. So your votes matter. And when you know that your vote matters, there's a lot of people who want to vote. Persons with disabilities are one of the populations that really want to go out to vote and have more barriers to participating in elections. And the with the work I do with Get Out the Vote is you're calling voters that are likely to vote the way that you'd like, you want your candidate to go. They're likely to vote for your candidate, but they're low propensity voters. And you have a relationship with them. You call them and you say, hey, first of all, will you support my candidate? Then you call them later on and say, hey, look, are you still going to vote for my candidate? Can we help you with making a voting plan? And then we call them and say, hey, look, let's go out and vote now. And when you do these calls, it comes with this big bucket of people that are interested. Everybody's in this bucket that we've identified, all kinds of people. But when you get to the very bottom and it's like halfway through the election day and you're calling people to say, hey, look, you know, it's election day. What do we need to do? The majority of the people that we call at that point are persons with disabilities that don't have to get. Yeah, they don't.
So it was an accessibility issue.
The majority of the people that I find every time I do this, over all the years I've done this, on election day, the majority of the people that we have to leave, and you could hear the pain in their voice. You know,
wow.
I want to vote. I can't get to vote.
That just makes me want to cry. And I mean, because yes. I think about we're talking in this podcast about the intersection between, and for lack of a better term, disability justice or justice for persons living with disabilities. And also environmental justice. I mean, we're talking about justice. And we live in a representative democracy, as imperfect as it is, but enshrined in our Constitution, we still have the opportunity to vote with our voice at the voting box and with our dollar every day. These are things that we can exercise all the time. And I don't think there are generations now in America who have no concept of what it is like to live in a society where you do not have the right to vote. Right. No concept. And I'm not going to mince words. This election year in 2024, at the time of the recording of this podcast, this election year, democracy is under serious threat. And then I think about vulnerable communities, some of the communities of people living with different disabilities that you encounter. And yes. I think about frontline communities. I think about fence line communities. I think about communities living in generational poverty, all of whom are extremely vulnerable. And our votes matter. I always want to say, if you're not voting for yourself, vote for somebody else who right. maybe couldn't get there today and who needs your vote. Anyway, well, sorry, I got off on that. But
No, that's great, because that's exactly right. You have to understand how they've been eroding. And I don't like playing red team, blue team when you talk to people, because when you start talking red team, blue team, people are like, I'm so tired of hearing about red team, blue team. And they turn you off. And I don't know how to tell them that, look, one team is trying to change the rules. One team is blatantly out there trying to change the rules. And the other team is trying to say, hey, look, come on, everybody. You know, you don't have to like us a couple elections from now. But for right now, you really need to get on board with us if we want an us to stay us.
Well, it's about protecting the guardrails of democracy.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make it a way that people will say, oh yeah, that's what we're saying with red team, blue team. Because when you start saying stuff like guardrails yeah. of hypocrisy. People like, okay, here we go again. And it's like, no.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
That's right. Lofty you.
But it's, and see, it's message. How do we get the messaging? How do we get the messaging out? How important it is, and how important it is to me. I have to be the squeaky wheel. The part of the reason I do the work I do is so I can be a person saying, you know, they see me on a Zoom. They don't know I have mobility issues until I bring it up. They don't know I have like some, you know, some, you know, depression. I have, you know, major depressive disorder until I'm like trying to push myself through a thing, but they don't know that that's what's going on with me. So you don't, I guess the other thing is you don't know what other people are facing. So try to be compassionate. But the what I was getting at though was not that, was I try to be a representative of my community when I'm in these spaces, because there's not somebody speaking for us. And when we're talking about taking away voting rights, and I do not want to take away the fact of how certain, like the Black communities and BIPOC communities are being targeted with oppression. I'm not trying to take away from that, but I'm trying to let people know when you start taking away access to those communities, you even the pressure, the amount of discomfort, the amount of injustice to the disabled community is far greater.
Oh
Because,
my.
and I'm not trying to take away, I'm just trying to say, look, think about this too. Reproductive health care. When you're talking about reproductive health care, people think about people, okay, I don't want to get into a eugenics discussion, but I think people need to understand there's that you need to at least understand that eugenics is something that we need to figure out how do we handle. I hear people talking about what happened in I was on a call earlier today, and they were talking about LGBTQIA plus issues, and the person was talking about what happened in Nazi Germany with people that wore the pink triangles. And I don't want to be that person who's trying to take away from the misery of others, but say, but yeah, but the disabled community, but the disabled community, they started on the disabled community before any other groups. They were telling that they weren't good enough, that people with disabilities were good enough to live. I can't remember the word. There's a phrase for
Well, wasn't it historically, I mean, didn't the eugenicists historically, didn't they attempt to alter human gene pools by excluding people and groups who were judged to be inferior? And they
yes.
wanted to promote those who were judged to being superior. So, I
And they
mean,
started.
we're shifting in the conversation here. I'm hearing away from just persons living with disability as a matter of access and accessibility to now, like, having, I mean, real exclusion and persecution and discrimination, you know, which is the whole eugenics scene, by my
Right.
understanding.
Well, and see, there's a reason I'm going into the eugenics, because I want to touch back into the thing that I think is the thing that most people are going to show up to the ballot box for is reproductive rights. And I don't, when people started talking about reproductive health care, and they're talking about their communities and how it's going to impact their communities, I keep trying to shout, look at how it's going to impact the disabled community, because you can look at it as like on the fetal part of it, and that's where the eugenics comes, is when do you decide whether or not this fetus is viable and what the quality of life of a person is. And that's what I'm saying, is like I hesitate in getting too much into the eugenics part of it, because people are going to say, well, you're just going to kill a child off because it is going to have Down syndrome. No, nobody's saying that, but somebody might. So we've got to be able to find that distinction. But if you're having a person, a fetus that has no chance of being viable or living for very long outside of the womb, then you have to make decisions based on that, based on our medicine. And so that's one end of the reproductive health care thing. And with what they're trying to do with the bans, if you do a 15-week ban, which is ridiculous, but if you do a 15-week ban, well, 16 to 20 weeks is when you want to do the amniocentesis to get the best results.
Right.
So that's going to impact. And again, trying to stay away from the eugenics conversation, but understanding that that's something that we do have to understand is there. Because like what we're talking about with Hitler was, they literally had this good Hitler couple who had a disabled child under a year old and sacrificed this child to the Nazi cause to show, look, we understand our child is substandard. It's not, mm-hmm. it's an Untermensch. It's a subhuman. So you must kill it. And that's what was happening to the persons with disabilities during that time period. And we're not that far from that. Women in our countries, talking about reproductive rights, women in our country were being sterilized because they were outspoken. We can't have that. So obviously this woman, and because they were loose women. So basically that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum of the disability with reproductive rights is, what if a person okay, I got it. Newsflash. Disabled people have sex. Disabled people like having sex.
What is that allowed? Is that allowed? Well, right.
Very loud.
Yeah.
It is very loud sometimes.
That is not a barrier. Right.
Well, you have to find, there's some really good sex positive. If anyone's interested in finding out more about sex positive thing with disability issues, I can pull up some really good stuff, but there's some really good sex positive advocates out there for disability issues. Anyhow, but disabled people have sex. I'm off on that tangent. Let's go back to disabled people having sex.
Well, but we're talking about different nuances of justice issues for persons living with disability, because I want to recall that you schooled me that what's really helpful is not thinking about what's wrong with the person, but instead what particular barriers is someone dealing with. And so you've got people dealing with vision barriers or mobility barriers or maybe emotional mental barriers or, you know, different kinds of things. And so as you're speaking and sharing these different aspects of, gosh, disability justice, right, I'm thinking, what is fair and equitable for persons who are living with different kinds of barriers? That's what's going through my mind. Yeah.
Right. And then I'm going back to the reproductive health care issue of if disabled people have sex and then a person with a disability gets pregnant, then they have, you know, I don't know how I've got, you know, I had four kids, I have four daughters, and I love every one of them, but I don't know how I made it through raising all four of them, because I had the disability I have was always there. It just became where I couldn't push through it anymore and had to acknowledge it. What if somebody is far more impaired than I am and had sex and got pregnant and there's no way that they can care for their child, or they don't have the support system to care for their child with their disability? You know, that's the barriers. Could there be, we're not even thinking, are there barriers to parenthood? Mm-hmm. This is something I'm just saying for the first time out loud, thinking about it. So when we're talking about reproductive rights, we need to have conversations about how it impacts the disabled community as well as the other communities. So we don't usually get brought into those conversations. And what the bottom line is how do you bring us in? Go ahead.
No, how do we get brought into these conversations? And we're going to pivot a minute here now to you know, climate impacts and natural disasters, because environmental justice is all about the communities who are hardest hit, who are most vulnerable, either because as a fence line community, they're right on the edge of a major polluter and being contaminated all the time, or frontline communities, they are like the last stand, usually between an extractive industry like fossil fuels and natural habitat. And they're trying to hold the line, basically. And they're being persecuted all over the place. And whether we're in urban, suburban, or semi-rural environments, we have persons living with different barriers and disabilities in every community. And I know when I've worked with first responders a lot, neighborhoods, communities, counties, you know, civics may do a good job of mapping where there are people with different barriers who need to be considered or not. And it's right. Like you brought up the point that this is a community that is an afterthought so often in floods, wildfires, storms, hurricanes, tornadoes. You know, I mean, come on, folks, right?
So I live in a kind of a bedroom. If there's a bedroom community county, that would be where I'm at. It's mostly rural, but we have a little bit of municipality. So by the you know, hard line definition of rural, it's not rural, but you could fool me, because it's still very rural with its thinking, and it's still very there's a lot of farms. It's not very industrialized, basically, is what I'm trying to say. And there's a lot of not very forward progressive thinking here. So back in 2022, we had an ice storm, and it wasn't a horrible, horrible ice storm, but we had an ice storm come through one night, and there was a like 100-bed nursing home that the people that night left from their shift, and they left, and then the next day only two nursing assistants and one nurse showed up for 100.
Oh my gosh.
And somebody had to call 911, and when 911 got there, they found two people who'd passed. And they found two people that had to be sent to the hospital in critical condition. And it was the people, it was the people in the nursing home that called 911. And the people that had perished, when I was looking, I brought this up to talk about tonight. And when I was looking at the report and the oversight report and everything, they said their thing, what they said is the people who had passed away had already died, but because of the ice, funeral services, the funeral home couldn't come. And I'm like, that still doesn't seem to me to be, that still doesn't seem like you're giving the best care. I mean, really, you should, anyhow, it was a corporation that runs a number of nursing homes, nursing facilities in the state. And when they did the final report, they were fined $100,000, if I remember correctly. And the final report was talking about the issues. It did talk about, you know, they should have been more people and they were negligent, but it never brought up this corporation. So we've got to see how corporations also have to have a responsibility in taking care of their people too. But let's go back to the natural disaster. This was just an ice storm. This is just one night ice storm, and we had two fatalities and two people in critical condition. When we talked on the Green Faith Circle, I brought up Katrina, where over 100 people died in nursing homes because they were left there. because nobody went back to get them. And we talked about...
I want to interrupt you for a minute and say, in case people are thinking nursing homes are just for the elderly who are more indigent and can't afford fancy assisted living, that's not true. They're people in convalescent. They're often places where adults with different disabilities end up living. So it's a high population of different aged people living with some kind of disability.
Right. And it,
either
yeah.
short term or long term. Yeah.
There, another name for it, we say nursing home, it's also congregate living facilities or assisted living. So I'm sorry for using the terminology with that, congregate living or assisted living. I guess one of the things that we can say, because they've been short, because there hasn't been as much funding as there used to be in the past, of having people, this is a weird tangent, and this is where my cynical side comes in, because we're not funding to put people who should be in these assisted living places or have the assistance they need. I guess that's a good thing, because they're not being left there to die. So we've got to get involved with what's happening to the people, and that's in these living facilities, and that's one of the areas where there's a big issue when it comes to voting rights is when people go into these facilities, then there's a lot of control over who comes in, can take their votes, can work with them. And there's been some bad actors who may possibly have come in to try to, there's a lot of people talking about election integrity, but when you look at how elections are done, you'll see that they're actually done very equitably. Except for when it comes to persons with disabilities, because the answer that everybody would like to think of is, rather than make it easier for people with disabilities to vote, they think, well, this will make it easier for people to cheat, so we're going to tap down on access.
Right. I mean, just the assumption that the system is incredibly broken is such a major lie and a farce to begin with. And those who are promoting that lie and pushing it are the ones who are tampering with election integrity more than anyone else.
I will tell you, it drives me up the wall every time they say there's been no big cases of election interference. And I want to say, yes, there has. In North Carolina, in 2018 and 2020, in a couple counties where they had to actually have it, and it was the Republicans that did it. It was the red team that did it, and the red team were harvesting ballots. They got caught, and it was so because they got caught. The first time in U.S. history, they had to redo a federal election for the House of Representatives.
Stunning. So I'm going to move us off the red-blue team, and I'm going to say, you know, there's an intersection. There's an intersection here between justice for persons with disabilities and justice for environmentally vulnerable groups. And this is something where we were remarking Greenface Circle this month, how so often when counties or cities or communities come up with, you know, resilience plans or adaptation plans or climate action plans, you know, to deal with increasing impacts that everybody's experiencing, there just is not representation around the table or in discussions from enough persons with different kinds of disabilities, is there?
No,
there's not.
When I shared on the Green Faith thing, something that my aunt was part of the project in Turkey. I'm half Turkish, and my aunt in Turkey did a wonderful, was part of the project that did a wonderful, really in-depth pamphlet booklet about what to do for disasters, natural disasters with persons with disabilities, and how to have a plan. So after the circle, I went to look to find more resources, and everything I found in the United States, I found stuff. I found like two or three websites, and they were all the same verbiage. So they all copied and pasted throughout the different. Yeah, so we're it's an afterthought. It's like, okay, here's a box we have to check off. And with the increase of weather events that are severe, we're not prepared to take care of our disabled community. And the thing that, what do we do about it? Is nothing about us without us. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm being a squeaky wheel. That's why I'm being loud. That's why I'm telling people that you need to vote. That's why I'm trying to say, look, you're going to have to help persons with disabilities vote. I have a 501c3 that me and my friends started here, along kind of associated, affiliated with the American Association of Persons with Disabilities. It's called Rev Up NC, Register and Educate. Use Your Power, North Carolina. The focus.
Can you repeat that? Can you repeat that, Pamela?
Rev Up NC. You can find us online at revupnc.org, but it stands for Register, Educate, Vote, Use Your Power. This is the one equalizer that we have in our society, that I have the same vote as Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg. I have the same exact voice as he. This is where Still. We all. Yep. At this point. At this point.
So rev up. Rev up and see. Yeah.
So
fabulous.
Do what you, if you want to be a good ally, do what you can to reach out to the community of disabled people. Don't pity us. Try to figure out how to get us to have the same access that you have. Equitable access. Please consider going to every month we have a meeting of our county board of elections. I have found out so much about the elections, and we're in good shape, except for we've got a lot of people who are threatening our election workers. So really good election workers are quitting. Show up, be part of the process. Not only do I want people to open up spaces for persons with disabilities to join, I want other people to go into these places and be part of knowing the mechanisms of the elections, because people put on elections and people can't be fallible. I'm going to tell you a story that happened here in North Carolina that I found out about it 2 years later, because if I found out about it during that time, I probably would have jumped in my car and drove to that polling location, and I don't know what I would have been responsible for. They were having, you can say, if almost every place you just, nobody can ask you or question your disability from like a governmental. So if you go to some place and say, I require this assistance because I have a disability, I'm talking about the government. So if you go up to a place to vote and say, I need to have curbside voting, which is a thing that you can do in most of the states, through the Have America Vote Act, HAVA Act, it's called. You can have somebody come to your car, take your ballot, or sometimes they even have a little pop-up tablet that they can bring to you so you can vote electronically. So if you show up to vote and they say, prove to us we don't think you're disabled, that's illegal. And this one county, this one polling location, will swear on a Bible that they were disabled. They can't do that. So I guess basically there is an
they
issue.
They can't swear on a Quran or swear on a Sanskrit a grimoire. They've got to swear on the Bible. Yeah, interesting.
It's not the book. It's the fact that they're being questioned for their disability, and that's illegal.
Right.
That is illegal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whenever I bring this up, people start saying, well, couldn't people abuse that? I'm like, yes. So you're going to take away people's access because some people might abuse it. That's the same thing with service dogs. You know, oh, people will abuse it. Like, you know, they might. But you have to make sure you have access for persons with disabilities. But back to trying to tie this all back into the intersection between disability justice, disability issues, and what we have to do to make sure that we are protecting our disabled population, and also making sure that we have access. You know, you have to understand the impact that on one side that the environment does. But I'm going to go to the other side, because you're talking about fence line and front line. Person with a disability, if you get it, if you develop a disability later in life, or if it becomes a point where it's a big impairment, because anyone can be disabled at any time in their life, whether it's permanent or temporary. But if you get it later on in life and you lose your livelihood because of the way that our culture is set up in the United States, where your health insurance is tied to your ability to be. And I heard somebody say this in a meeting about people that had intellectual and developmental disabilities. This person said, "Was this person a productive citizen?" And I'm like, "What?" Tie so much into that productive citizen. So when you become disabled, you're an unproductive citizen. So you're less than. That goes back to that whole. When you have a point where you have the Social Security that's still available for people, there's so many people who basically say, "Okay, I can't work anymore. I have to claim Social Security." Try to file for it, and then they're basically, "I'm going to spend the rest of my life in poverty."
Because you're not, if you don't draw on it at when it's fully mature, you're not drawing much on anyway. I mean, you're just living on so little.
And let's just say that you're a person that's been working, like maybe you don't have a really high paying job, and you're working from job to job to job because you have a chronic illness. You lose a lot of jobs. You don't have a lot of longevity. So there's a lot of reasons that we have to look into how this impacts persons with disabilities within our culture, because these people are usually become unhoused, and or they'll end up in the housing, and they'll they end up being the front line and fence line communities too. So
that's a really good point. Go ahead.
Well, there's a large amount of population of unhoused people who are people with disabilities, and we already know that there's a large amount of them that have addiction issues. Well, are those addiction issues because they have mental illness issues that are not being treated, and
trauma?
What if trauma?
A lot of trauma on the street.
Oh my gosh, I watched a really, really impactive documentary where the guy was talking about, you know, the children he worked with that had trauma. And when they were children, everyone's like, "Oh, the children have trauma. Oh, we have to take care of them." Then they become teenagers with their, you know, acting out.
Not so cute. Yeah.
And then they become unhoused people with chemical dependencies. Yeah. No, and that's so not all bodies are physical. So,
and then of course, as Selena made the point, I'm just going to touch on it again, is that in terms of people not being able to access shelters, whether it's disaster shelters or because they're houseless, because they may have service animals or emotional support animals with them, and they can't take them into places. So even the way we conceive of like evacuation and helping people, it's very problematic for anyone who might need to be depending upon a service or emotional animal companion in some way.
I'm going to push back a little bit on this, because I'm going to say a service animal can go with you wherever. So if a shelter is not allowing you in, they're breaking the law. But again, it goes back to what I was talking about with the ADA. Who are you going to call? Service dogs.
Well, and right.
What if somebody says, "This is my service dog, and here's my dog," you know, blah, 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 barking. A dog that you can't control is not a service dog. It's a pet. So who's going to enforce these laws? We've got.
Yeah.
What I see is the ADA was a really good step, but there's still too much in our culture and our mindset of thinking of the impact of what it means to give access to persons with disabilities might inconvenience other people, whether it's financially or, you know, that means that we have to wait. That means we have to have the captions on the screen. That means, and that shouldn't matter. Your inconvenience is, I'm sorry, but
right.
There's a
are
lot
you
of stuff.
Are you trying to be just? Are you trying to be just or not? Are you trying to be humane? Are you trying to be equitable? What, you know, when I think about wanting to be a good advocate, and I'm at this time in my life, I am not aware of living with barriers that would qualify me as a disability, would qualify as a disability. I have, not currently. And when I had PTSD, which was debilitating for a while, I did have to learn to advocate for myself. And it was appalling how much I had to learn to advocate for myself, because there really wasn't anybody advocating for me. So it was a learning curve. And I feel I really want to advocate for people. But part of where I'm sitting right now as I'm listening to you, Pamela, is that I want to be a good ally first. And part of that for me is like, I have to listen a lot. I really have to be willing to listen to people from the deaf community or the blind community, or, you know, with mobility issues or with various kinds of emotional and mental issues, because every time I listen, it's like, wow, cultural humility, learning curve again. I don't know. And I really need to be willing to understand so that I even know what to advocate for. In fact, it's not up to me to come up with the issues to advocate for. I need to listen to someone from a particular disabled community, pardon the way I have to put that, to understand even what to advocate. So pardon me for speaking that much, but is that, am I right? Is that a way to try to be a good ally?
And it's not, we're not monolithic, just like the other marginalized communities. Like I said, we're the most intersectional community out there. So, and you know, you have mental health issues, mental illness, you have issues where it could be a neurodivergence issue. You have people who have mobility issues. Let me tell people one thing, another newsflash. People in wheelchairs, the majority of us can walk. So don't look at us like, oh my gosh, I just saw this person at whatever store in that scooter get up and grab something and walk back. There are people who do need mobility devices in order to make it through the grocery store. But they can walk. It's called ambulatory wheelchair user. So what I'm trying to say, why I went off on that tangent, is every one of us experiences our barriers differently. My barriers are going to be different than a person who is hearing impaired or deaf. So that's why it comes back to going back to the barriers, because when you focus on the barriers, you take it. It's easier to handle it, to manage it. But the thing that I am most concerned with, and I have to bring up again, is please quit looking at the cost of things. Please quit looking at the inconvenience of something that it puts on other people. Because when you have to deal, and I'm not trying to be, there's a way that casts us almost like as disabled Karens. And I hate the term Karen too, because I find it misogynistic, very misogynistic. But I'm using the shorthand right now, even though I hate it. if I stand up and say, look, there's no curb cut here. There's a venue that I love going to here, and they have a like an elevator thing that I can go up to the next level with my wheelchair. But when I get out of the parking lot, there's the place to get from the parking lot onto their sidewalks is blocked a lot. So I can't use it. Don't use the accessible bathroom stalls as storage areas, because don't that's not a storage. So I don't care if nobody uses it. I don't care if it's there's reasons that they're there. And again, inconvenience to you shouldn't be what you consider. I want to go back to something that Selena brought up at the Green Circle thing, and we talked about. So I'm going to tie it back up into having plans for natural disasters and climate events. A lot of times, I know you can call your 911, your emergency response, and tell them that I have somebody who relies on oxygen. So they know where those people are. So it does take some of you have to have a responsibility to be that squeaky wheel and tell people what you need. But when you face a lot of people who want to say, but that puts me at an inconvenience, a lot of times we get quiet and we don't fight for our rights. And that's why I try to show up in these places that people don't usually show up, as an activist making phone calls and saying, but what about the disabled people? And people will come to me afterwards and say, well, I identify with this disability. So we have to get to a point where we ourselves, as a community of persons with disabilities, can get over our own stigma.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of that. Yeah. So how can you be an ally? Just start looking at disabled people as people, rather than disabled people. I see I use the bad terminology. Stop looking at disabled people and start looking at persons with disabilities, and then take it a step further as saying, this is a person who has this barrier.
Yeah, you know, when I mentioned this the other night, but when we were living up in the mountains, this is most recent, of Santa Cruz, where they had the, you know, one in the 500 year fire that just devastated everything. And I mentioned that community because it doesn't begin to have an infrastructure to deal with that kind of a climate disaster. And I was very uneasy about that. So having been involved with Neighborhood Watch, I went around and I had about 50 neighbors up in the nooks and crannies of that neighborhood. And instead of thinking of people like, oh, you're a latchkey kid, oh, you're, you know, this or that, or what are you? I got to know Betty over there. And Betty is dealing with vision barriers. So my neighbor, Betty, a person, has vision barriers. And if she had to get down the steps of her house quickly, that's not going to work for her. And over there, Frank, who happens to have walking devices and needs help getting in and out of a van. Oh my gosh, what would happen to Frank, my neighbor, with mobility issues? You know what I mean? So like you're saying, not disability people, but your neighbors, your family members, your coworkers, they have names. What barriers are they dealing with? And how do we start to envision things like resilient communities that involve consideration for the barriers they're dealing with? This is the kind of paradigm shift I'm getting. Listen to you.
And it's you talk about it being a paradigm shift, and I hope I'm not talking over you, because you okay, good. You froze, and I know sometimes we'll be talking over each other. I apologize if we did. But there is a paradigm shift happening with persons with disability justice, disability rights. Alice Wong, if anyone wants to look up some of her work, Alice Wong is and there's other writers, other authors, but Alice Wong started a thing called the Disability Visibility Project. And we're, you know, it's a lot of times we're supposed to be that side character that's supposed to be inspirational, that, you know, oh, at the end of the book, they get up and walk across the room. Woo!
Heidi.
Heidi, or Secret Garden, or there's a
lot
of that.
Yeah.
So So I can, yeah, now my mind is running through all of those. Yay, ADHD. Please don't use ADHD as an excuse if you don't have it, because I always said, did you lose relationships because of it? It is a
Yeah.
disability. It's not just a, oh, just quirky.
Yeah.
But quit thinking of us as side characters or sidekicks. We are. And I'm hoping that people will start seeing more of representation. Again, it comes back to representation. Now when I watch, when I look at ads, I went into the grocery store yesterday and I looked at the ad, and the people in the ad, I remember it wasn't that long ago that almost every ad you saw were white people. Now you're seeing cultural diversity in advertising. Well, you're going to start seeing creeping in, and we in the in the in my community are going yay when we see persons with mobility devices as models, and when dolls. I don't know if you've ever seen the and I'm hoping that this is not it. We call it inspiration porn when you see somebody like take their first steps, and it makes you feel better because you're not like them. That's why they call it inspiration. But if it's like recently when they had the down awareness, Down syndrome awareness week, or they had the commercials with the young lady saying, I can read Shakespeare and I can do this and I can go out drinking with my friends. That is the person first and the person centered type of representation that we want to see, rather than, oh, you're inspirational. And
Person first.
you're gonna start seeing that, and we are in a paradigm shift. It is something that's starting to happen. So
Well, I thank you so much for the work that you're doing to help more people to be I don't know, help more of us be sensitized to how to be more inclusively person first, person centered, and especially too with respect to some of the big changes that are happening in the planet. And I mean, it comes back to the idea that the climate crisis, it's a moral and spiritual crisis, and this crisis allows us an opportunity to sort of go back and reevaluate what is right. What is the right thing to do? What is right and just? And this is one of the features of that that I know is really important to me. And so thank you for the work that you're doing.
can I give a big, because I feel like we spent the last 45 minutes, hour complaining about stuff. I want to give a positive. Can I give a positive?
Please.
I am loving how many state parks and areas like that are making accessible like paths and hiking trails. So if you have a friend who has mobility issues, or even some places that give you like things that you can feel if you have low vision or blind, try to find activities that you can do with friends that include everyone. And I love the fact that that's becoming more of a thing with the
Wonderful.
parks. So there you go.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. I love that. Any before we wrap up this episode, do you have any last resource or any last words? If there's one thing, just one thing people could do this year, this is Earth Day month. This is April 2024 at the time of the airing of this podcast, first time. When it comes to disability rights and earth rights, can you think of the one most important thing that our listeners could do to help?
Make sure that you have a plan for neighbors or family or friends if there is a natural disaster, a weather event. Make sure that you that they have make sure that you're a good advocate for them as well. And consider involving persons with disabilities in your activities more, because we usually get, I'm going to tell you, the pandemic, as isolating as it was for everybody else, to me, my world exploded because I've been living online because of my disabilities. And now all of a sudden, everybody's joining me in the Zoom world where I can, like, now I'm, that's when I went full throttle into being an activist. So
how about that?
In a hurry to get things back to normal and start realizing how much access is gained now because after the pandemic, we now have these virtual places to meet. And that's what we're doing now. And I thank you for inviting me into your virtual space.
Well, so many important things that we keep learning and doing. And it's been a real pleasure, Pamela, hearing you more this week and learning about these very important issues. So
thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And folks, that's going to conclude this episode of Blue Marble Podcast. And thank you so much again, Pamela Kelly, for sharing some of your story, some of these great resources and tips that can help us all. Thank you to our audience for tuning in. Folks, if you value what you've learned here today, please share this information with others. Spread the podcast around. You can share the URL link. You can find recordings of these programs available for listening and download by going to the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. You can look under the Our Work tab, and you will find all Blue Marble podcasts under the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, with links to current and past podcasts. Or you can go directly to www.circlesanctuary.org/circlegreen. Check out the Circle Green links there as well. And we did upload some great resources that Pamela has shared with us. It's all good. So until next time, this is Char Bear signing off. Thank you. Good you do, folks. Stay true and blue. And hey, hope to see you in the green space.